All right. As I said, today we're going to start a new series. But before we do that, I want to just share some information. Last week we had our Commitment Sunday, and I'm sure some of you have looked at this. But I also just want to kind of give you an update, an ongoing update. And if you have this sheet in here, it kind of looks like this. And we're talking about making Havenstone soup. We're going to just touch on this real briefly and move on. Number one, if you have not had the opportunity to give in your commitment for your commitment card, are there some still back there? Please do that. There is also, you received an email of an online version that you can do so. But I do know that there are people at times that say, I don't want to make that. It's between me and God. I understand those things. But we also need to be faithful. And if we step into ventures like this, we also need to be well educated to begin to step into that too. So here's what we have so far. As right now, you can just kind of take a look at the soup pot, and our goal of $118,000 is there for our building fund and our monthly operating expenses. What I like to say is the good thing is none of those stayed the same or decreased. Both of those areas, through your commitments and your love and your hope, gave a commitment to that, and they all rose. Some percentage wise, very well. Everyone went up, so that's a good thing. So we should be excited about. The other thing is we kind of knew as a leadership team that we needed extra income than just everybody else, you know, giving more, and so we believe that we had to do that. So. In recognizing this fall, if you have any questions about specifics, you can talk to Jim. He's glad to do that. But I don't want you to get discouraged. I want to be encouraged by the fact that there is an increase that was not there before and would not have been unless God touched your heart and you decided to step out and do that. But in addition, we realized that we probably need additional funds in order to make this. So the first thing is, if you haven't handed in a pledge, please do so. Okay? There's only one person who will know the information. He's right there. I don't hear it. I don't know it. I don't see it. Jim and God. So they're the only ones who have that. So please hand that in. The other thing is to explore additional funding. One is with the denomination that we got to start with and have been associated with, the Free Methodist Church, to see if there's any kind of funding with them, and we will have some meetings with them about that. Another one, which has been our main drive from the beginning, we go back to February where this thing was introduced, was a daycare. And when I say with a daycare, we are really looking at people, if you've had any experience or any expertise, not just in the day-to-day things, but how to help organize it, how to connect it, somebody that we can lean on with that information, because many of us don't know. And I think I speak for Tom and me. We've never done a daycare and don't plan on anytime soon, do we, Tom? No, so, and some others. But, you know, we believe that this is a great area and a way to make up for that. If our projections are true, then God will bless us tremendously. But we also don't want to say, oh, here it is, and then not have knowledge. So if anybody has had any experience, please, I'm gonna say connect. Jim's kind of been our point person for people connecting, so we don't have 50 billion other people doing so. Connect with Jim, and he'll go ahead and be able to connect us and share that properly. And the other thing, federal, state, and nonprofit grants, they're out there. We have some people or a person or two that can help figure that out. You may be coming across something, and you may hear a man at a church, and they've got a grant for helping with childcare or whatever. I don't know. Let us know that. We don't know that. It takes a village to make soup. Remember that? It also takes a village to fill the pot, okay? It may not just come from your account or whatever, but it may come from other things that you know. And other large foundations and grants and donors. And you may have individual donors. You guys may know the Rockefeller family. If you do, you can give them my number. And but you may know somebody who God has blessed in the financial realm, and they want to contribute to a nonprofit organization that are going to make a difference in the community. That's our goal, isn't it? And our goal to make a difference in the community and change the community for Christ. So, number one, I don't want you to get discouraged about this. I want you to be encouraged about this, because we kind of figured all along, if you go back, that we would need additional income. But I will say, if you've had any experience with daycares or anything like that, or child care, preschool kind of stuff, let us know, because you may be right here. If you also have any experience with fundraising, let us know that. You may have some fundraising ideas that we haven't begun to thought of. Somebody came up with a Joe Corby thing. And I know sometimes we say, oh, that's a heck of a lot of pizzas. But you know what? It gets us closer. Okay? So this is an exciting thing. This is a step in the process. All of us would love to say, hey, boom, you don't have to pledge anymore. It's all good. But that's not how it is right now. And I know God. My dad told me a long time ago, what God orders, he pays for. Okay? And sometimes the bill collector may be at the last second, but guess what? God pays for it. Okay? So just, you know, examine your hearts. And again, I want to start with those, particularly those who have become members and are part of this church, who said that you made a commitment to know, grow, serve, and share God in this area. Please make that commitment and live up to your membership in doing so to help us in that realm. Okay? And the main thing is the last thing on there, and I want to bring you back to this. Continue to fulfill our mission by growing our church and serving our community. When this church started, it was me and my family discussing about it and taking a leap and calling some others and twisting the arm of others and other kinds of things like that. And now we have a place where we worship, and we call this a church that is serving people in Port Deposit, that's engaged in all kinds of things. I can't even begin to scratch the surface of. There are literally in this church, and I mentioned it 1 week, there is, because of the connections in this church, there has been a child that has been adopted because of this church, right? A child that's going to get a good, strong life. That's exciting to me. It's not just something that we go to, we sing some songs, we check our card off and leave. It is the active, vibrant body of Christ. And that we should be thankful for, that we're touching lives. I don't know, has anybody gotten engaged here yet? I mean, we can do that. We can work on that, too. I guess we got to go through some generations first, right? But it's exciting, the stuff that's going on here. And we don't always see it because it's not always happening in the same place. It's happening out there, which is great. John Wesley would have been thrilled, saying, the world is my parish. And you know, I'm like Wayne said, I wish there was like five of me so I could get involved in absolutely everything that we're doing as a church. But the cool thing is, we're only scratching the surface, because I know one day we're going to look at it, we're going to say, I want you to take this paper and put it someplace safe, and I want you to say, my God, gosh, Lord, we were worried about that then? I heard of a church, it's a Latter-day Saints group, a little bit different than Christian faith, but I heard last night on the news, they're building a temple in inner city Philadelphia. Guess how much? $70 million. It will take 5 years to build in today's modern. $70 million. I'm sure Joe Smith years ago didn't think he was going to have something built at that amount, or Brigham Young or all them. See, it starts with a commitment. It starts with growing the body of Christ. Main thing we want to do here is connect people to Jesus. And if I went around the room, I'd say many of you are here because Christ touched your life in some facet of ministry. Am I right? In this church. And there's, guess what? We know people who are there. Invite them. Bring them. It's my job and the Holy Spirit's job to keep them. Okay? So that's the easiest thing we can do. All right? So I'm done talking about soup. Sound good? For now. So just put that someplace safe. I gotta tell you, I love this picture. It's my favorite picture I've ever done. I think I just love it. It just excites me. I guess maybe it's because where I am in life at times. But I want to ask you a question: have you ever been stuck or felt stuck? Anybody? Okay. And today we're gonna spend 6 weeks. And today we're going to talk about being unstuck in our faith, okay? We're going to celebrate communion. When my nephew, who's in his 20s now, was a real little kid, my parents lived in Claymont, Delaware, and it was the first time I went from a CRX to a four-wheel drive vehicle. And my parents had this area where you could pull, you know, you shouldn't pull, you could pull back in on the road, but being that I had four-wheel drive, I decided that we put this little kid in, he's about two or three, and we put him in the seat in the back, and Melissa and I were taking him to Chuck E. Cheese. And And you know what you can do at Chuck E. Cheese, where a kid can be what? Real cheesy, too. Remember that part? Forget it. But anyway, so instead of backing up, I didn't feel like backing up. I got four-wheel drive, so I decided. And I had one of the old four-wheel drives where you had to get out and actually lock the hubs. You guys remember those? Okay. And where you actually had to get out and do something. Okay. So I had to do that. And I started off across the road, and I hit the spot, and it was kind of wet. And it went, and I said, oh, that's okay. So I went out and got locked the hubs. Boom. And then I noticed the car started going like this. And I was stuck. How can you get stuck in a four-wheel drive car? That's saying it stuck up to the rim in my parents' yard. Yes, let me say that. In my parents' yard. I was stuck and mud was flying all over the place. And we got a kid who's wondering why he's not at Chuck E. Cheese and he's still sitting in a seat. Dad didn't have any car that could pull me out. Nobody in the neighborhood did. We're, northern Wilmington, or as they say up there, Wilmington. So we're here, and then all of a sudden, I had to call AAA to pull me out of my four-wheel drive vehicle out of my parents' yard. How humiliating is that experience in life? You know, Melissa was in the car and she's like, well, why don't you rock it? Why don't you stop? You're gonna get sunk. No, it's four-wheel drive. I got it. Boom. I'm not listening to her. I know what I'm doing. I'm a man. I got this four-wheel drive. You know, and we go through this. And the good, you know, here comes AAA. That he has to run that little hook across with the winch. And I had to stand there and watch my four-wheel drive car being pulled out of a neighborhood. All right. I was stuck. And it didn't matter how much power I had, didn't matter how much I put down, didn't matter how much I rocked back and forth, the hole was getting deeper. And I was getting more and more stuck. And I was getting more and more aggravated because Melissa said, you should have listened to me, you should have backed up. And that just aggravates you all the more. Okay? And this was years ago and I thought of this. Or, you know, last week I was bad during those flood waters and things. I got my car, well actually I got Melissa's van. And I was headed out, and it was in the morning, and it was covered. There was this one road, Crothers Road, if anybody knows where that is. Had some water over top of it, but I could still see the line, and I'm used to my Jeep. I said, I can go across here. So I went across, and I heard the car go, and I'm like, no, come on, 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 come on. And it's just when you start praying, come on, Jesus, please, just get this car through here. Woo! Then you get on the other side, and you're like, yes. Okay, I'm on the other side, yay. And then you go on the other side, and you look, and you get over the little bridge, and everything's washed out. And you're on this little, like, barely two-lane bridge, maybe one-lane bridge. And so I'm kind of stuck in here. And then all these people behind me said, oh, well, if that idiot made it, I can make it. And so then I start doing, like, a 50,000-point turn, bing, 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 to get back around. And then I turn back around, and I'm facing water. You know, it's like water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink, that kind of thing. And I'm like, on this island in a van, down by the river. So that's what I felt like. But anyway, so I turned, and I said, okay, go, move, let me get through there. Because now it looks like the water, now that I've gone through that, oh, I can do it. Remember, I went glub, 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 and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, if one car's dead, if I get this car caught in the water, my wife is going to kill me. So I get in, and I finally go across, and I'm halfway across, glub, 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 glub. I'm like, come on, Jesus, please move it, please move it. And I think the Archangel Gabriel shoved me across the rest of the way or something. But I got across, but I was close to being stuck. And when you're stuck in life, I've had cars break down. I've had all this kind of stuff, and when you're stuck, it's miserable. When my rodeo engine, my clutch broke, I was on the side of the road, and people were passing me by the road, and I was just so frustrated in life, I start yelling out the window at these people going through the speed limit while I'm on the side of the road. Hey, slow down! You know, I just start, you know, yelling like some complete imbecile because I'm stuck. And then when I'm stuck, I need somebody to help me. And as I began to look at these things, I realized there was other times in my life where I've been stuck. I realized that that when I was in college, that I had a point in my life when I was stuck. I was stuck in life, that I had done everything that I thought was fun, but I was still void. I remember, I actually had this discussion with a student this week where I remember standing in the Coliseum at a basketball game at West Virginia University, feeling like the only person in there alone at that point. I was stuck in my life. with no direction at that point. I remember going to seminary, and I remember trying to finish in 3 years, and I remember that the light behind me was too far away, and if I could see the light ahead, it was too far away, and I just felt stuck, and I just wanted to throw it all in and give up because I was stuck. Because when you're stuck, you just want to say, enough, you know? And so here I am dealing with these kind of things. I remember when I was a pastor in Lewis, and my wife and family were up here, I felt stuck. Had to provide, had to do this. Good church, doing some great things in the community and in ministry and connecting people. But meanwhile, personally, I was miserable and stuck. Just stuck. Stuck and stuck. Stuck in life. Has anybody ever felt this way? Of this next picture? Right here, is this kind of how you feel in life? Kind of just stuck in the mud, and you're just like, where do I go? Afraid to move. If you do, you feel like you'll sink a little bit more, and you're just worn out. How many of you have ever felt stuck? Let me see that again. How many of you have ever felt stuck? Okay, most of us. The rest of you are lying. No, that's okay. I'm just teasing. But to be, you know, many of us have been stuck, and maybe you're here today because you just said, God, I'm stuck, and I need to get unstuck, and I've tried everything else. I'm just stuck. And only you can get me unstuck. If you're really true, I need you to get me unstuck. You know, the interesting thing is the Bible is full of people who got unstuck. Who got stuck and got unstuck constantly. And, you know, take the disciples. Here they are with Jesus. Everything's going great. They have this great entry into Jerusalem where everybody says, Hosanna, praise him. And by the end of the week, they went to pray and do something, and their leader has been taken, and he's going to be killed, and they locked themselves away. They're stuck. They start to wonder, man, everything I did the last couple years, everything I thought and believed in, was that even true? They're stuck. And so one in particular is one I really want to talk about today, Peter, Simon Peter. You got to love Peter, because Peter has a great history of being stuck at different points. And I just want to share with you a couple things, and then I want to tell you what we learn from his life about this. The first thing that gets Peter stuck is his ego. He had a big ego. Anybody in here have a big ego? Anybody? Okay. I do. I mean, I'll admit it. But Peter's interesting because here he is. In John 13, he is called the rock of the church. On this rock, I'm going to build my church, he tells him before. And yet at this point, right before Jesus, they're getting ready to go to Gethsemane, right before Jesus' crucifixion and everything, what happens? Jesus decides to wash his feet. He's, oh, no, you're not going to do that to me. No, you're not going to do that. And then Jesus tells him, well, let me tell you, before the rooster crows, you're going to deny me 3 times. And Peter basically says this, here comes the ego. All these other goofballs will, but not me. You're talking about the rock. Remember, you called me Rocky. I'm the one you're building the church on. What is that? That's his ego. No way. I can see John. I can really see that Judas guy doing something bad. But you know what? Not Peter. Not Simon Peter. I'm the rock. Remember, Jesus? You told me that. Remember you said that I had a direct line right there? And what's interesting is his ego gets in the way of him, and his ego actually causes him to be stuck. Think about what he's doing. He's telling Jesus, no, you don't know what's going to go on. These rest of these scumbags will, not me. Okay? So that's the first thing. The next thing, and that's in John chapter 13. And you can see it right there. Jesus said, will you lay down your life for me? And he says, you're going to deny me. The next one is his fear and his confusion. After Jesus is taken prisoner, we have this great story of Peter and his denial of Jesus. And in John 18, he's in what I would like to call the dark of the soul. Do you ever have those stuck moments where it's just, you're just dark? It's just a dark point in your life. And here he is. Everything that he's put his faith in and everything that he thought was going to happen in just a few hours is completely changed. He has a Seder meal. He goes to sing and pray. These soldiers come to dig Jesus. He cuts one of their ears off. Jesus picks it back up, plops it on. And Peter runs away, leaving Jesus there all by himself. He's deserted everything he spent time doing. Now he's in this courtyard trying to figure out what's happening, and he's got several different people who ask him, hey, weren't you with him? To the point where he says, no, I don't know him. To the point where he ends up cursing and swearing that he never knew him and couldn't stand them. And the rooster crows. His fear caused him to be paralyzed and stuck. And his confusion made everything unclear at this moment. So he didn't know what to trust in. At that moment, he probably wished he had just really kept on fishing on the side in Galilee rather than what he did. Last thing is his safety. And this is where we're going to spend most of the time of his stuckness and getting unstuck. While Peter, one of the things that I do when I get stuck at a point in life is I revert. Anybody revert? When you get stuck, when you get to a point that gets difficult or a sticky point that you feel if you get too close, you're going to be like the rats in the trap and stuck totally, is I'll revert to old comfortable behavior, old comfortable surroundings. You know what I mean? Does that make sense to anybody? That you just kind of step back. And what does Peter do? Jesus is resurrected, but you know Peter. They've gone down to Galilee now, and Peter goes, I'm tired of being locked away. I have seen Jesus in this thing. Let's go fishing. What does he do there? What does he do? He reverts back, doesn't he? Isn't that where Jesus found him initially? Jesus found him and said, hey, come follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. Again, one of the things that we've got to keep in mind that why we exist as a church is to connect people to Jesus. That's that fishers of men. In his stuckness, he forgot what he was really called to do. He wasn't a fisherman anymore. And it's really cool that they don't catch anything the whole night. And I've talked about this before. Anytime in the scripture they talk about these guys fishing, without Jesus, they're really bad fishermen. Really bad fishermen. But it doesn't matter. If that's all you know, it's comfortable to us. Correct? And I could pick all kinds of things in life that I can get comfortable with when times get tough. It's hard to do the right thing, isn't it? It's difficult to really have your life in this world and in this society to really serve Christ, isn't it, at times? To really do what Christ calls us to do in every facet of our lives, it's difficult. To answer the calling of Christ, it's difficult. For those of us who serve in roles of life and we feel like we're doing what we're doing for Christ, we may say, I get more accolades if I did this. If I worked in this company or that company rather than doing what I do here. Or we go through the if-then point. And this is a big thing for people in middle age. We go through the if-then. If I had made a different choice when I was 18, how would my life have been here? Anybody ever done that? Okay. What do? We get stuck at a point in our lives and we don't want to figure out how to get through it and get Christ to get us unstuck. So we go back to what was comfortable. And we always glorify what was comfortable. I always glorify what was comfortable. If I look back to the things I did when I was 20, 25, well, actually, let's say 20, they were fun in my mind. But you know what? Those same things are the same things that caused me to be stuck when I was in that Coliseum all by myself and alone. But now I've had 20 years to go ahead and romanticize those. You know what I mean? Anybody romanticize the glory days? Don't you? I would never want to go back and be a teenager. Anybody? But you know, when you see the teenagers and you see them, like, they're having fun, you're like, I want to have fun. Can I have fun too? Where are we going? And they look at you like, oh man, go. You know? But they do some fun stuff. To have no cares. No responsibilities, very small responsibilities, or in the grand scheme of things, they seem like major then. I remember like the major thing in life was where I was going out on Friday night, and I would always get together with my friends, and we'd say, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What is there to do? I don't know. What is there to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? And we spent an hour doing that, playing what do you want to do? And then we just crashed at Tara's house most of the time, or Cruise Newark. Anybody remember that? You're only allowed 3 times away, around, right? Some of you still cruise in New York? Is that good? How many times are you getting out? 2 or 3? Okay, there you go. And you know, I don't know why I didn't have proposals because I'm yelling out the window at girls, hey, baby! You know, I mean, I don't know why they just didn't stop. Oh, that's the man I want to marry, you know? I mean, that's a great way to start off a relationship, you know? But we did that stuff, and it was fun. You know, I don't do it now, besides the fact that I'm married, because I'm an old man, you know? And they probably lock me up, you know, for yelling at the people out there. But the other reason is because we don't have time. We don't have effort. And because we've grown to the point that realize if I yell at the window at my wife, hey, baby, she looks at me like I'm crazy, you know? And so what is it about us? We romanticize that, don't we? Because we get stuck in life and life sticks us. It pushes stuff on us. You know, for in this, Peter reverts to the way that he was. So his ego plus his fear and plus his confusion caused him to revert and be totally stuck. All that stuff that he had saw, the lame walking, the blind seeing, the boy with the demon in him, the epileptic thing that would cause him a seizure, all that stuff, the transfiguration of Christ that he saw with Moses and Elijah, all that stuff went out the wayside when he got stuck in his faith. Isn't that amazing? He got stuck in his faith. I don't feel so bad at times when I read this. This guy saw some really cool stuff, and he was still stuck. Stuck in his faith. He began to ask questions at this time. How did this happen? Why did my life turn out this way? Did I waste the last several years of my life following this Jesus guy around? There's no hope. Why did I bother? Maybe I should have never followed him. Some of us may go through the same questions when we're stuck in life. I want you to read this verse with me. This is going to be one of our key verses throughout the series. And I want you to look at this and read it with me. You ready? And just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glorious power of the Father, now we also may live new lives. Not stuck ones, new ones. So, everybody good? Here's what we're going to learn from John 21 that was read to us by Linda today. We have Peter saying, sorry, I'm going to go fish. Going to just go fish. I had enough. Going to go fish. So he goes ahead and he goes fishing. And while he goes fishing, the other people go ahead and join in with him. And they're just fishing all night, not catching a darn thing. And they're really, really, really fishing. And this really cool thing happens. Jesus is on the seashore. Now put yourself in the boat. I'll be Jesus today, okay? I'm way over here. I'm way over here on the seashore, okay? You guys are all in the boat. You haven't caught anything. You're professional fishermen. I'm some stranger because you can't tell who I am. And I yell to you. I say, hey, you caught anything? Go ahead and throw the net on the other side of the boat. There you go. That's my reaction. Yeah, right. Who the heck do you think you are? I'm the professional fisherman. But you're some dude walking on the boat. The boats are only about this, you know, let's say it's three quarters of the row wide. That's not too big. You know how stupid you have to be to listen to somebody on the shore and you're a professional fisherman? You know how stuck you have to be to listen to somebody on the shore and you're a professional fisherman that says, hey, just throw it 2 feet on the other side of the boat? Like all the fish are staying, let's hide out here. Let's not go in there. Shh, be very quiet. You know, I mean, that is ludicrous. And they do it. That tells you how stuck they are in their lives. They're willing to listen to a complete stranger on the beach. And they take and they throw their nets on the other side. And it's full. I'm amazed by that. I'm so amazed by that. So the first thing that we have to do and that we learn in this, lesson number one, if we're going to get unstuck in our faith, is to admit that I'm stuck. I've got to admit I'm stuck. I got to quit saying when people say to me, hey, how you doing? I'm good. Or how's your walk with, you know, one of the things they used to ask every time Methodists historically grouped together is, how's your soul? And with Wesley and the early people, you didn't just go, oh, I'm good. They'd say, you tell me why you're good. I want to know everything that's going on that week. I want to hear what's going on in your life. You know why? Because they took time for each other. And they realized that it was an accountability. There's the A word. Did he just say that? Accountability. that they shared with each other their concerns and where they were stuck in life. We have to admit that we're stuck. Basically, what this is by admitting is this word that's up here, humility. That removes the ego thing right there when we say, you know, I'm stuck. I've been a Christian. You know, I had the pins. I had all the stuff. I've been a good Christian. But the bottom line is I just haven't connected to God in a while. I guarantee you there's people, and Stephen alluded to it in prayers, people that may not have been here for a while. And I realize some people are still doing vacations and that kind of stuff. I realize that. But we all know there are people, don't we? We all know people that haven't been here for a while and they can come up with all kinds of things in their lives. But they've been stuck in their faith. Some, there may be other circumstances. Some, I realize, calendars are full, all that kind of stuff. But I will guarantee you, some people are frozen because they're stuck. You'll get a whole list of things. You'll get what I said, I did, you did, whatever. But bottom line is, we get stuck in our faith. And they're not ready to admit it. And maybe they don't have anybody to admit it to. Because they're afraid we're going to say something to them or something ridiculous. There's an old saying, and you may have heard this. If you find yourself in a hole, the first rule is to what? Stop digging. But we do that all the time. Just dig yourselves deeper. And, you know, we've just got to look at ourselves and say, I'm stuck. It's hard at times when you're struggling in your life to look at your spouse and say, I'm stuck. I'm stuck in this relationship. I'm just stuck right now. It may not have anything to do with you. It may have something to do with you, but I'm stuck. It's hard to go ahead to your friends and say, friends, I'm stuck. I'm just stuck in life. I'm miserable. I can't get out of it. And it's especially hard to admit to God that we're stuck in our faith. He's the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. We're supposed to always be like, oh, God. But I can tell you there's times as a pastor and there's times as a Christian that I'm just stuck in my faith. And living off, let me use an Old Testament reference, off of yesterday's manna. Which, remember we talked about that last year? Which is stagnant and maggot filled. You know? And that's what I'm trying to put down my gullet. So we need to tell God, we need to go to God, we need to say, I want you to say this with me, God, I'm stuck. Say it again.
God, I'm stuck.
And say it one more time.
God, I'm stuck.
Okay? And if you're not, get ready. There will come a time where you will be stuck. The joy of that newness of a relationship with Christ, the joy of just things that you never connected to, you will end up at a point where Satan will have you be stuck, okay? So we need to admit that. What does Peter say here? Peter says, I'm going to get myself unstuck. I'm going fishing, okay? And we do the same thing. I'm going to get myself unstuck. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that. I'm going to get that way, okay? So that's the first one. Next thing is, we need to be open to God's voice. Even if it's ludicrous and he's on the shore and he's telling us to do something that we know what we're doing, we've got to be open to hearing his voice. I love the fact. This is my favorite part of there's two parts of the story that are my favorite. This one, where they listen to a complete stranger on the shore and they do what he says in 2 feet. It's just ludicrous. And they do it. But often what happens is, and I've shared this before, people who are stuck often do one of two things. They either cut people completely off and stay stuck, which some of those people I was talking about are like that, or they do this. They listen to the wrong voices to get them unstuck. I'm going to tell you right now. Well, let me ask a question. Are you a Christian? Okay, if you are a Christian, and I don't assume anything, if you are a Christian and you have issues in your life that require counseling, why are you going to a non-Christian counselor? You understand what I mean? Don't you want somebody who loves Jesus helping you do what you need to do? I read a story this week about a pastor who had a very strong couple in the church. They were vibrant. They were doing everything. And then all of a sudden, he was shocked because they approached him and said, you know, we're struggling. We're splitting up. It looks like we're going to get a divorce. And the pastor met with them, but then they found out that it was already, like, she was pretty much gone. And then when he started looking, she had been going to a psychic to tell her what she should do with her marriage. And the psychic told her, you need to rekindle with an old flame. And she listened to that. This is a leader in the church. And we wonder why our churches at times are stuck and why our relationships are stuck. Because we're going to the wrong sources. We listen to the wrong voices. It's a tug of war that exists on our spirit that continues on and on. You see, you have a spiritual side that's pulling you toward God, and you have a physical, earthly side that's pulling you away from God. People who are in this thing, in this cycle, they do the worst things that they could do. They abandon church. They abandon their Christian friends. They don't call them back. They don't connect with them. They don't go to small group. They don't answer calls. They stop reading God's word, and they turn to all kinds of dangerous places. Can you think of anything more damaging than being stuck and isolating yourself from God? Our first inclination is push through, push through, push through, push through. But it doesn't always work that way. Look at Peter. Peter said, I'm stuck, I'm going fishing. In John 24, we have Jesus at the beach, and there's a neat little picture here that kind of displays it a little bit. There he is, he's right there. And he begins to listen. Jesus asks him, have you caught anything? No. And he tells him to do something. The interesting thing, in his stuckness, they were willing to listen to the voice of someone else. Wasn't working what they were doing, so they were willing to listen. Some of the best advice I've ever taken has been godly advice from godly people. And when they gave it to me, I wanted them to just shut their mouths. You know, one time I was just doing my thing, and my dad said to me one night, he said, the Lord's never going to leave you, but one day he's going to let you go. And at the time I was like, oh man, you don't have a clue what you're talking about. But guess what? He did. You know, I realized I didn't want to be let go by God. All right? And changed some things in my life. Proverbs 14, you have that written in your book there. There is a path before each person that seems right, but it ends in death. That's pretty clear there, isn't it? We all have those paths. God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are completely different from yours and anything you can imagine. Sometimes we need to hear the voice of God, and we need to have God do this to us right here. Give us a spiritual kick in our rears. I need it. I need him to wake us up and get me out of the hole. Okay, so that's a couple. I want to ask you this question as we're doing it. What kick in the pants is God giving to you today? In other words, what is Jesus speaking to you from the seashore? What is he speaking to you? Where's he telling you to throw your nets? What's he telling you to do with your calendar? What's he telling you to do with your relationships? What's God telling you today? Listen to him. And I guarantee you, I'll tell you how it's the voice of God, because it won't be what you want to do with it. It won't be. It'll be the hard way out. And that's how you know it's from God. Then we need to commit to God's plan. One more, and then one other blank, and then we're good. We need to commit to God's plan. This is just that we obey. When you're stuck, you just can't admit it. You just can't listen to the advice. You've got to follow through with the plan. Got to go through that, through the plan. It's like, I can't just, admit that I love my wife. I can't just say verbally, will you be my wife, will you be my husband, and then not commit to it daily. If I just stopped committing in 1996, we wouldn't be married here today. And so we need to commit to God's plan, and that may be a veer off of what we've already been doing in our lives. This is my next favorite part of this story right here. When they start hauling in fish, and I think it's really cool because when they haul in fish, they know it has to be God, Jesus, because they stink at fishing. And the first time Jesus came to them, he had them throw the nets over, and they were so full. They do the same thing this time. And John says, it's the Lord. And Peter, who is fishing naked in the boat, puts on his clothes and jumps in the water. Now, that's the one question I'm going to ask Peter when I get to heaven. Why in the world did you put on your clothes and jump in the water? Why? Because he's so stuck. He's been out all night. He didn't have a clue what's going on. That's what I think. So he says, oh, that's Jesus? I'm going to put on my clothes and jump in the water. Kind of dumb. And can you see, here's this big guy, this rocky kind of guy. Hey, yo, Jesus. You know, here I am, he's here. And he's just all wet and soppy and clothes are all wet. And he's like, you know, on the beach. He swam. The rest of them are like, look at Peter. He put on his clothes. Let's go. They're rowing in. We're making our way. But Peter had such a desire. Why? Because everything else was hopeless. He was so stuck. And just at the hope of it being Jesus, he put on his clothes and jumped in the water and was the first person to the beach. Why? Because now he was willing to hand over his unstuckness to somebody else. He was willing to commit to the plan. He committed, it filled the fish, and it reminded him, wait, I'm not even supposed to be out here fishing. I'm supposed to be on the shore reaching people for the risen Lord. He is alive. And that's the excitement that he had there. I just love what he does. Jesus, he gets there and Jesus says, come and have some breakfast. He feeds him too. Isn't that cool what Christ does? We need to reach to a point where we just do things that are ridiculous for Christ. We listen to him. Jeremiah 29 says it very well. And this is one for our church and for each one of us. For I know the plans I have for you. My plans are for good and not disaster, to give you future and a hope. At that moment, with that being Peter, he knew he had a future and a hope. Everything that he thought was lost was now there once again. The definition of unstuck is this. Unstuck is simply moving forward in my life because I am willing to give God complete control. Are you willing to give God complete control? Now, that's something easy to say while we're sitting in church. But when you go home today and the Ravens are playing, whoever they're playing, or tonight at 8 o'clock when the Eagles are playing, and the whole big Mike Vick back to the Atlanta Falcons and all that kind of junk, and if God says, hey, I want you to go down and I want you to go down to Port Deposit and I want you to help clean up at 8 o'clock during the Eagles game, and you know you're not going to Joe's Grog House and watching the game, are you willing to do that? You willing to give him complete control there? Are you willing to give him complete control of your calendar this week, of your relationships that have been struggling? Are you willing to give him complete control of your job and everything else? Because we're going to get to all these this week in the series as we look at this. I want to show you three circles as we wind down here today. And they're three circles that everybody is in. First one on this side is your life. The circle represents your life. And anybody who's ever been involved with Campus Crusade may have seen this. This one circle right here represents your life, and that chair is the throne of your life. What's the most important thing in that life? You have all kinds of activities, all kinds of things that you got to get to and do, and in that circle, right on the throne of life is who? Yourself. That's yourself. You're on the throne, and God's just out there. He's not even part of your life, and there's some people who are like that. The next one we can go to is we have that same life, we have that same circle, we have that same throne, and on the throne, who's on the throne still? Us. Now, God's part of our life, but he's not on the throne of our life. God's just added into the rest of our calendar, if we can fit him in. But look how the life is all over the place. Just feel like it's all over the place. Now, let me look at the third one. The third one, who's on the throne? God, Christ is on the throne. And look at how everything else in life is in balance. Truly on the throne of your life. Campus Crusade has been using that for years and years and years, and it still rings true. We are all, if we're honest, we are all in one of those three areas. And I got to be honest and say that at times lately, I've been in that middle circle where I've been doing the work of the Lord, but I haven't made Christ the center point of my life. Anybody else relate to that? That's just where I feel. And so I just challenge you to do that as we are going to go ahead throughout this time, and we are going to go ahead and we're going to share all kinds of things. You know, when I was stuck in my parents' yard, I should have listened to them about not riding through the yard. I should have listened to my wife about how to get out. I should have had enough sense not to get in there first place. I should have listened to the guy who picked me up and said he never drugged somebody out of a yard before in the community. I should have listened to all those things. And today what I want to do, we're gonna go to communion. And did someone get some servers today? I don't know whether they were able to. Did they? Okay. So I'd like the servers just to come forward, and we're gonna do this. And I want you to just come up. I'm gonna ask the praise team to come up first, as well, because I want them to be served. And I'm going to share a prayer, and then you're going to go ahead and be served communion.